FSN Radio.
It's all about what's next.
Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports.
The Financial Survival Network.
It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to and perhaps even watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. Today is a glorious day. It is December 14th, 2020. And well, lots of things are happening, John. We're going to go over some of them. It doesn't pay to be a Chinese Communist Party infiltrator or official or spy now, does it?
Hey, Kerry. Well, it's about time it didn't pay, because I think it's been a very lucrative job for a lot of time. But there was a hack of Chinese Communist Party documents that showed where all their people are. And it turns out they're in the big banks and they're in, you know, other countries' militaries and political systems and everything. So they have been basically infiltrating the rest of the world for quite a while now. And that's, you know, it's interesting information. I'm not sure what anybody's going to do with it, but it makes, it gives us a clearer picture of China's operating procedures over the past couple of decades, you know, when, it's been pretty well understood that they cheat economically and financially. For instance, if you want to set up a company in China, you have to give them your proprietary tech and you have to agree to be have the joint venture be 51% owned by a Chinese company that reports directly to the Chinese military. You know, all that was understood. But now there's more. So it's an interesting new data point in American foreign affairs when we're trying to figure out how to behave with the rest of the world. You know, now we know what China is really up to.
Hey, so the new saying could be, hi, I'm here from the CCP to help, right?
Yeah. And I'm, you know, taking over your military while I'm doing that. Yeah.
So you think there'll be repercussions, though, because nothing else, the people are out there in the open. It puts them on the defensive, right?
Highly unlikely that we'll do anything because, you know, remember, Biden's taken over. And the Democrats see Russia as the main enemy and want to be allied with everybody else against Russia. Whereas the Republicans see China as the main adversary and would be fairly happy with an alliance with Russia versus China. So now that the Democrats are back in charge, it's hard to picture anything happening to China going forward. I think we'll more than likely go back to our old way of dealing with them, which didn't work for 40-year-old white high school educated men in the U.S. You know, basically, because we were shipping all our good factory jobs over to China, that decimated that whole section of the economy, along with a lot of other sections of the economy. But basically, you know, people that used to have middle class salary, unionized factory jobs lost them over the last 20 years and got knocked several rungs down the economic ladder, which is why we had President Trump, you know, because he spoke that language. He told people, I'm going to try and fix it. So they all voted for him and it didn't work. So now we're kind of back to square one as far as that goes, which means, you know, elections in the U.S. are going to be crazy events going forward because, you know, combined with the fact that every single Republican believes the Democrats stole this election, you got the old simmering anger over lost factory jobs. So, you know, the midterm elections, I think, are going to be way more interesting than the presidential election this time around, because it's possible that that the Republicans take back the House and give us seriously divided government. That feeds back. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry, Kerry.
Yeah. And we'll see about the runoffs on January 5th for the Senate, whether mm-hmm. Republicans hold them or not as well. So interesting times ahead.
Yeah. We're not done with the whole political story of this election. You're right, because the final two senators have to be elected here. And if they go Democrat, then the Democrats control the whole government. And look out, you know, they will. We'll see everything in sight be bailed out for $5 to $7 trillion this year, probably, which will be very interesting. You know, there's a lot of positives and negatives to that in the short run, and everything in the long run is negative about something like that. But this year, it would make a big difference, which kind of maybe leads us to the current stimulus plan that they're apparently going to announce today. It's going to be like $900 billion, which, as you were saying before the microphone, or before we went live here, that's a number that's bigger than the insanely big bailout that we did back in 2008, 2009 of the big banks. You know, that was the number that they forced Bush into agreeing to. And now it seems like pocket change in retrospect. You know, those guys were amateurs when it comes to spending in insane amounts of taxpayer money. But it's not really going to do much. If it's $900 billion, that would pretty much cover the amount of student loans that are going to default in the next couple of years, but that's all. It might save most of the restaurants that are going to go bankrupt and out of business permanently this year, but that's it. And, you know, it might bail out some of the other small businesses, but certainly not all of them. And it won't cover the commercial real estate bankruptcies that are coming. And it won't even come close to covering the state and local pension fund underfunding, which is going to lead to mass defaults and, you know, on the part of cities, a lot of bankruptcies going forward. So, you know, the number, no matter how they allocate it, isn't going to be enough to stop a lot of the problems that are here, you know, not coming, but are here right this minute and are going to have to be dealt with in 2021. So I think the most likely way this goes is that they announce the thing, the financial markets like it for a little while, and then they realize all the stuff I just said, you know, that this isn't enough to do anything, you know, and then they start to demand a bigger bailout, and the stock market starts to tank because it doesn't look like the bailout is going to come, and then the government panics and gives us the bailout that is big enough to affect some of these things. And, you know, what that does to the value of the dollar and gold and silver is anybody's guess, but I suspect it's going to be spectacularly good for precious metals and pretty bad for the dollar and the other major currencies. So, you know, we're there, Gary. This is the thing you and I have been talking about for a really long time, that bailout that has to be so big because the crisis is so immense that it can no longer be contained by just the government bond market and the stock market. It's going to bleed over into the currency markets and precious metals and lots of other things. You know, in other words, the currency crisis that sends everybody piling into safe haven assets might be here next year. So I can just say it's about time. It's been a long time talking about it. And let's get it over with. You know, let's see what happens next.
Almost two decades. You've been talking about it, John. You know that. Amazing. So the mother of all bailouts is going to be with us soon. It'll be trillions and trillions. If they don't bail out the government pension funds, particularly the cops and the firemen, we'll see mass fleeing of the system, because all of these government workers, a lot of them don't really work so much for their pay, or work is maybe the wrong thing, but a lot of them aren't there just for their inflated annual salaries, but they're there for their inflated lifetime pensions, which could run into the millions for some of these people who are high earners. And we saw in Detroit with its bankruptcy, they scaled back a little bit, but hardly any. Now, rubber is going to meet the road. I think a partial bailout of the pension funds and then the participants eat the rest is probably going to happen. Regardless who's in power here, I don't think they're gonna bail out everything. How can you justify bailing out an underfunded pension like New Jersey, Kentucky, or Illinois when other states are only have 10 or 20%? And some states like Florida are theoretically underfunded, but in reality are fully funded. And I think Nebraska, there aren't that many of them, but there are some states. Then there's California, which is the mother of all pension deficits. So something's got to be done. And regardless who's there, everybody loves a bailout in Washington, John.
Well, it's easy to give money to people. You know, it makes you seem really generous. And everybody likes you when you do it. So that's the easiest thing in the world for politicians, to bail people out, really, until there's a consequence. See, that's the thing. The consequence might be imminent now instead of just inevitable, where all this debt shifts the pressure over to the currency markets, and we start seeing the dollar fall, which is to say we start seeing the prices of real assets go up, which we are already seeing. You know, copper, iron ore, zinc, things like that are rising dramatically in price. Lumber, you know, because, and that's leading to increases in new home costs. And there's a wide variety of prices that are already going up. Most of them are real assets. In other words, stuff that can't just be created out of thin air financially. So when that becomes even more widespread, and it becomes clear that it's a falling value in the dollar that's taking place rather than just a rise in the price of these various commodities and things, then there's this consequence where it stops being easy to bail people out. You know, we'll see what happens when that time comes. But in the meantime, if the Democrats are completely in charge of the government, they will bail out all the state and local governments, you know, because public sector workers are their biggest single constituency. So they're not going to let those guys feel any pain if they can help it. And if it's a divided government, then that makes it more interesting and stressful, because the Republicans, let's say they're in control of at least the Senate and then maybe the House after the midterm elections, they don't want to bail out California. You know, there's nothing in bailing out California and New York for them, right? They would rather see these Democrat-run states go bankrupt and be able to point to them in the next election and see and say, you know, see, do you want those guys to run the whole country? Because look what happened when they were in charge of just a state. So that's a political plus for them to have bankruptcies happen in Democrat-run states. So we'll see how it goes. It really depends on who controls the government. But yeah, but ultimately, it doesn't matter. You know, all these bailouts will have to happen at some point in some way. And the extra debt that we take on and the extra currency we create will have an effect of some sort, you know, and we'll just have to see what those effects are. But basic supply and demand says that they're going to be problematic for the big currencies of the world. You know, and it's not just the U.S. bailing everybody inside out. It's Japan and Great Britain and the rest of Europe. You know, everybody's doing it. So the euro and pound sterling and the yen and maybe the yuan, they're all going to feel the effects of soaring debt and soaring currency creation. And that becomes the story of next year and thereafter, I think. So it's, you know, it's an interesting time and a terrifying time if you're not prepared for it. So you really need to be loading up on real assets at this point. And I think gold and silver are obvious choices. And silver is an especially interesting story because it's also an industrial metal, which is big in clean tech. So if the Democrats are in charge, we'll get a variation of the New Green Deal. And that'll make silver interesting just because of that. You know, it won't even have to have a monetary component in the investment thesis anymore. It can just be the thing that goes into electric cars and solar panels.
Yeah, and it could well be that that it's a double whammy where it sends investors flooding into the silver market and increases the demand for silver. You know, I've got a thesis going, and I'm not sure if it's so or not, but I think unconsciously everyone knows that that this inflationary spiral cannot continue, even if consumer prices aren't going up right now. And that's why you see so many people investing in their homes. COVID as well, because now you're working out of your home and you find out, gee, there's a lot of stuff in my house that isn't really conducive to working from home. So I got to change it around. I got to fix it. And plus, people just know in their bones that real things are what's going to be necessary to weather the storm. Hey, so we've got a report that Trump is open to pardoning Snowden.
You know, I have never characterized myself as a Trump fan in all these years, even though I like a lot of what he's doing. And I kind of like the Democrats less than I like the Republicans. So I was hoping Trump would win. But if he pardons Edward Snowden, I will come out a little bit late, but I'll come out as a Trump fan, because that would be a really good thing. You know, the idea that James Clapper, the head of the NSA, went before Congress and flat out lied about them spying on Americans. He said, no, we're not spying on Americans. And he got away with it. He's now a CNN analyst or something like that. You know, he's making big bucks. Yeah. for his lying. And Snowden, who exposed the lies, the unconstitutional behavior and the lies of the NSA and the rest of the government, that he's still on the run is a travesty, you know? So they, what they would do in a just world is they'd pardon Snowden, bring him back here, give him some high government position or high corporate position anywhere, anyhow, good life, where he can use his skills. And they would take the jail cell that's now allocated for him and toss Clapper and some of Clapper's buddies into that cell. You know, that won't happen, but a pardon would be good enough. You know, that would be a start. And then maybe we do Julian Assange and a few other whistleblowers, and we'll be on our way to being, once again, a constitutionally controlled, just society. We'd still have a long way to go, but at least we'd be taking steps in that direction.
Doug Casey summed it up best. We used to be America. Now we're just the United States. And I don't know how united the states are at this point. What about the concept of succession or civil war? Is that possible, you think? Is really going to happen? Will people actually stand up for something for once and actually take on the system?
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
Osino Resources is a Ross Beatty-backed gold exploration company in mining-friendly Namibia. Osino's district-scale land package is situated near two producing gold mines, one of which Osino's management team previously developed and sold to B2 Gold. Osino's founders and management are experienced mining professionals who have already successfully developed and sold two companies in the past 7 years. Osino has a tight share structure, and with its current treasury, it can self-fund the advancement of its gold discovery into at least 2022. This is an exploration company with drills turning that you'll definitely want to pay attention to. Osino trades in New York under the ticker OSIIF and in Toronto under the ticker OSI. To learn more, go to osinoresources.com. That's osinoresources.com.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Well, we're divided enough now that probably a majority of the country would say, oh, you want to leave? Go ahead. Good riddance. Because there's this thing out west called Greater Idaho that is a movement on the part of the people in rural and eastern Washington and Oregon who are just sick of the coastal elites telling them what to do. They want to leave their states and move over and become part of a bigger Idaho, which maybe incorporates part of Montana too. And, you know, I think a lot of people on the coasts are like, yeah, good, but let's get rid of these, you know, these idiot redneck farmers. You know, they can go be part of, you know, a country, a state full of idiot redneck farmers, and we'll stay over here and be sophisticated urbanites. And that'll be bad. You know, we're at the point where that sounds reasonable to both sides in the argument. So it wouldn't be a surprise if we shuffle around some populations now. And I don't know how you do that. I think you have to change the state constitution possibly, and then clear it with the federal government. And then, you know, so it's logistically, might be logistically new. Have we ever done anything like that before? I'm not sure, but it would be tricky. But it's a sign of how divided we are and how far down the road towards just general dissolution we are, that a lot of people think it's a completely reasonable idea. You know, they don't see any reason to coexist with people that they consider to be so stupid as to be subhuman, you know, and that's a really bad place for a country to be, because it's a prelude to some kind of civil war. And going into future elections with Republicans feeling like they've been robbed and Democrats feeling like they finally took back over from the morons, you know, anything could happen going forward. And secession is just one of several really scary scenarios out there.
Yeah, well, I saw a map one time, like 10, 12 years ago, where the country was broken into four separate countries. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like the Northeast, that kind of was one country. And then the South, from Texas to Florida and up southern states there, Kentucky, all that was another one. And then kind of the Midwest, Upper West became another country. And then you had West Coast became its own country. It just seems like we got to have some really major cataclysmic event, and maybe it's upon us now, I don't know, that will actually get people up in arms, literally, to, in their perception, take back power. Because, you know, these so-called redneck farmer, you know, rural types really feel put upon and, you know, used and abused, and they're ready to take action. I don't know that it would break up exactly into states for the same reason that you said, because you've got states, portions of states that might be a red state or a blue state, but don't fit in with it. So they're not going to want to go along with this. And will there be a mass diaspora of people fleeing red to red, you know, from blue states, red people in blue states to red states, and blue people in red states to blue states? That's the interesting thing. It could be a good play for U-Haul, you know?
Well, let's hope it doesn't end up like the Indian partition of India and Pakistan, because millions of people died during that. But, you know, it could be messy. You know, who you should have on is Tom Woods. He's the expert on secession.
Good idea. And yes, we will have him on. Yeah. I'm not advocating it, mind you. I don't think it's a good thing. I think it's really a bad thing. I think the country's finished at that point. But we could be in the fourth stage of the collapse. There was that Russian guy, I can't remember his name, who spelled out the stages of collapse. And, you know, we went into the first or second stage back in 08 and 09, and we haven't really done anything to reverse that. So interesting times ahead. But as long as the stock market goes up, all of the elites, coastal elites, are happy and everything is good. I mean, could you imagine we go back to something, John, like the Articles of Confederation, which was so successful after the Revolutionary War, that we just want to bring it back again? I mean, that's when every state was its own sovereign, and literally there was no first among equals, put it that way, not like today.
Yeah. Well, you know, I agree that secession would probably be a bad thing, at least in the short run. But, you know, we're looking at all kinds of bad things coming our way. So that's just one of them. And it's definitely not the worst thing that has a 5% or higher probability out there staring us in the face. So, you know, chaos is probably the defining word of the coming decade, just because we borrowed so much money and we've antagonized each other to the point where there's no way to come together for a solution. Not that there is an easy solution, but if there were any solutions, we still wouldn't be able to get together and work them out because we don't trust each other.
All right. So this goes in with the currency, because if there's not a country, then there's no currency. So does that mean that Bitcoin really does take off to the moon here? Yeah. And the cryptos rule, and gold and silver as well?
Well, you know, Bitcoin, I just don't understand. But it tends to attract the same kind of financial sentiment as gold and silver. So there's no reason to think why it wouldn't take off in the really extreme versions of financial chaos that we have coming. But gold and silver are obvious. You know, they have done that for 3,000 years. So the idea that this is the one time when they don't attract a huge amount of terrified capital during a crisis, so that would be kind of a surprise, you know, to be at that kind of a historical turning point. So, and plus there's plenty of paper out there to bid up Bitcoin and gold and silver. You know, it would only take 2% of global investable funds to send all three of those asset classes through the roof. So I think that there's no reason for Bitcoin and gold to be antagonists. You know, they're attracting the same kind of people, although maybe slightly different age groups, but the same attitude is attracting people to both categories of assets. And you know what? I just bought my very first Bitcoin ever in the last couple of weeks, just to be part of it, even though I have no idea whether it's going to 200,000 or 1,000 from here. But there's an ETF you can buy that holds Bitcoin, apparently. So I bought some of that. But hey, one other thing that the Robin Hood story.
Oh, right. Robin
Hood. And the new Chinese thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a Chinese version of Robin Hood.
Yeah. So the idea is spreading, you know, free stock trading as a video game is becoming this really popular thing. We might have to put Robinhood and the Chinese version of it into the gaming sector now when we think about them, because that's really how a lot of these guys play it. And you know, I had a talk with my son the other day, who it turns out is a big Robinhood trader. And he was telling me how, oh, I made $40 on this stock and $60 on this, and they keep going up. And I was thinking, oh man, should I tell him, you know? why the whole system is, and then before I could do that, he said, but you know what, stocks are overvalued. I think I want to start shorting them. How do I do that, Dad? How do I use options to short the stock market? And I was so proud, you know, my kid figured that out on his own, instead of just being sucked into the momentum trading thing. So that was a really proud parent moment.
Hey, you know, you couldn't teach, you know, Oscar Wilde said, anything worth learning can't be taught. And unfortunately, when it comes to money and investing and all this, you can help people. You can give them ideas and give them your opinion for better or for worse. But the fact of the matter is that in the final analysis, losses are the best teacher in investing. And just one other thing, and then we'll have to conclude. Back in the good old Civil War, the first one, I think a lot of people actually wanted to fight for the country, and that's why we had these massive casualties. I'm not so sure at this point, John, that anyone really wants to go out there and shed blood for the continuation of the United States of America. They might shed blood for their state to maintain that as a free area or an area of influence. But I just can't see, like, I mean, you know, Antifa, but they're just activists. They're not soldiers. They're not warriors. The real warriors in the country, most of the military is in the South, right? Most of it's in the South, in Florida, in the hard South, Mississippi, Alabama, Arkansas, and Texas, of course. There's not much, that many military bases. They're scattered around all over the place, obviously, because they're a great source of federal dollars for local economies. So we have like 10 times more military bases than we need throughout the country. But is or are the people, the citizens of the United States, willing to engage in a massive North versus South type confrontation to assure the continuity of the country? I don't think so.
Kerry, there are two parts to what you just said. One is, will regular people fight? And the other is, will the military and the police? And I think, you know, based on gun sales right now, people are gearing up for something. You know, they're getting ready to defend their interests out there if they have to. So I think we could have civil unrest involving gun battles in a lot of big cities in the future very easily, just because people are so mad at each other right now and they're increasingly armed. So, you know, you put those two things together and it's really easy for counter demonstrations and counter demonstrations to turn into gun battle. Now, if the civil unrest turns out into kind of a monolithic thing where people are just so sick of the government and they're protesting against the current system, which is what it should be, you know, we should all be out there together, right and left, protesting against the aristocracy that has taken over the country. And then they send in the police and the military to start shooting the protesters. That's a different question. You know, will the National Guard kill their friends and neighbors over something like this? And I think there's a good chance that they won't, that they'll just say, no, you know, I'm not going to slaughter these people. I know that guy over there. And I think my cousin is in the audience. So there's a good chance that we avoid a situation of martial law authoritarianism because the military and the police won't go along with it. And I'm being kind of hopeful here because historically that's not always the way it works out. But I think in this case, for instance, if there's a battle over the Second Amendment, in other words, a government tries to take away everybody's guns as a prelude to a more authoritarian system, you'd have the military and the police, who are basically private gun owners themselves, being on the side of the protesters in that case. So, you know, it's complicated, but I think that there are reasons to be hopeful about the whole authoritarian drift thing. But I'm very scared about the, everybody owning guns and protesting in the streets against each other, and where we have that kind of a mini civil war in downtown Portland or Seattle or someplace like that. That could easily happen.
We kind of saw it over the weekend in D.C. during the protest, the Proud Boys versus Antifa BLM, and Antifa and BLM really kind of got the short end of that confrontation. But I tend to agree with you. I think throughout history, the death knell of any regime is when the army or the military refuses to kill the citizenry, because they are the citizenry. And this is why our founding fathers were always against a standing army. But standing army we've got in spades. I think that's it for this week. Make sure you go over to John's site, dollarcollapse.com. Our site, Financial Survival Network. Sign up for your free newsletters. You need them now more than ever. And email us, kl@carrylutz.com, with your feelings about all these topics we talked about. And please like, share, and subscribe on whatever platform you might be hearing this podcast or watching it on video channels. And John, we will pick up next week.
Okay, Kerry, see ya.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.